debates about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to fight it with my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come to us and take it.
One shot at a time, just like Gonzales. We're keeping our guns.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
You tell them I'm coming, and Jason's coming with me. You hear? Jason's coming with me.
You fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
Bring it on. If you're tired of being spoon-fed politically correct cowbum every time you turn the radio on, join Colt Reynolds for The Shooting Bench here on the Just Measures Radio Network for the most politically incorrect firearms information program on talk radio.
I heard your teeth chatter from the cold outside. Saw the bullets soaking up the wounds in your side. I saw the young boys as they began to fall. You had tears in your eyes, cause you couldn't help it all. But you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
The Shooting Bench, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central.
The folks thought he'd call a great victory ball, but he asked the band to play the song Dixie. For you, Johnny Reb, and all that you believe, cause you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
The views expressed in the following broadcast are those of Just Measures Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. Be advised that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin-skin, lymph wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener discretion is advised.
Alrighty, here we are. Welcome. It is Monday, 17th of February, and we've made it in here. We made it back to Schatz Ranch this morning and managed to gather up our computer and get back over here. So it's hopefully we'll have it a little better this time. We kind of struggled through last week. We had some days that we weren't able to do a show, and then I managed to piece together a laptop and get a show on with no music, no intros, no promos, no nothing, just my old self. So hopefully we'll get that a little better this week. I hope you all had a great weekend. We did. We went out to, Wes and I went out to Schatz Ranch and spent some time working on the classroom and getting some things, getting our, the area that's going to be our pro shop, getting it squared away. And we'll be moving pro shop stuff in there, week after next. So for those of you that, and hopefully we'll get our online store back going again. That's probably going to be a 30 to 60 days down the road. We got a lot of other things that's more important right now. But, we are getting classes going. I think that we've got a 3-day, thank you, DeTinker. I appreciate that. We got a 3-day urban survival class coming up this coming weekend. And the following weekend, we've got people signing up for it already, and that is on Friday, the 28th of February, will be a 8-hour disaster preparedness seminar, and then Saturday and Sunday will be personal defense handgun 2. And that's going to pretty much lead off the season for classes out there. Casper Mountain, yeah, Jason made it out there. He's been out there now for about a week, and he's loving it. It's a great thing for all of us. So, and we're working hard to make it work. It's going to be a little slow taking off. We're doing this in a rather unconventional manner, but it's getting done. And I think that we've got people starting to sign. Our automated doohickey that we sign people up with is starting to get. Matter of fact, I'm going to spend a great deal of time tomorrow finishing that up, or at least getting it better. What happens when you click on a class, you get in there and you put all your information and whether you want lodging or not, and what weapons you're bringing, if you need ammo or not, you know, all this stuff. Very efficient little deal, and you pay for it right there, and you're in. And so, but haven't got very many classes yet attached to that, but I'm working on it here just as hard as we can. His Aviator, the Urban Survival class, is just as the name implies. There's if you go to shotsranch.com. Now I'm not teaching that one. That's our survival guru, Jeff Smith, excellent instructor, has got a lot of information, and he's extraordinarily qualified for that type of stuff. But he'll take what most people do as a simple explanation. So let's say, just off the top of my head, this is not, I don't think, in the urban survival class, but just off the top of my head, let's say that we're teaching somebody how to build a fire. And you get the average guy out there that will say, okay, here's your matches, here's one way to do it, and here's a Bic lighter, here's another way to do it. That takes about 5 minutes. And they got two or three friction ways here. And the fire-making class lasts about 30 minutes. Jeff can show you enough ways and different methods and means of doing stuff and have you go out in the field and do some practical exercises with it that he can make a full-day class, and you won't think that you've been gypped by doing a full day of fire building. But he's got stuff on family communications and exit strategies, an in-depth discussion of standard operating procedures for your particular area and situation and family, and decisions whether to bug in or bug out, planning for families and groups and individuals. And he can spend probably 3 or 4 hours real easy on your bug out bag. And it's an excellent class. I've actually sat through that one here 2 or 3 months ago. And this is a class that if you're able to make it, I'll guarantee you it will be well worth your time and money to get down there. The class is normally $650. It's a three-day class. We're doing it now, right now, introductory offer for $550. So you're getting $100 off on it. And we really don't have any lodging packages right now. But if you want to take this class and want lodging, get a hold of me, and I will make that happen for you. And I will make it happen at a price that you absolutely cannot possibly refuse if you decide you want to come down there. So I won't be there that weekend. That's the weekend that I'm going to be home. Matter of fact, we may go on a little family trip here and take a little break from Schatz Ranch for a weekend. But I will be out there most all of next week, and in preparation of three classes that I will be teaching, or 3 days worth of classes. Not, it's two classes in 3 days, the following weekend. So let's see. I guarantee you our sign up deal is already a whole lot more streamlined than Obamacare's website is. Yeah, it's working better already. The only thing that's not working about ours is that we just got to put more time into it and get it going. We just got so many things going, and so many directions, and just so many people and so much money to put into it right now. So we're hopping around trying to figure out what our best strategies are right now. But if you're interested in the disaster preparedness stuff and the survival stuff, let me tell you what all we got. We have a 3-day urban survival class that's coming up this coming weekend. The 8-hour disaster preparedness seminar that I do, this is the one that I've done for years, and some of you that are on the chat room right now have taken that class. We got a full-day class on aquaponics, another one on expedient shelters. Now, when you go out with Jeff, you're not going to sit in a classroom watching draw shelters on the whiteboard. You're going to go in there and talk about this a little bit, and you're going to go out in the field, and you're actually going to build your shelters and make them work and learn what it's going to be like to, if you had to sleep in it, to stay in it, which direction to face it, how to, you know, what where on a, what kind of terrain to look for to put it on. Land navigation, same thing. You're going to go out and get lost and find your way home. Living off the land, you know, that's a kind of a wilderness survival type class. Practical packing, that is your several different types of packs, your everyday carry, your vehicle pack, your go bag, your 72-hour kit, and then your main get out of Dodge bag. Fire building, primitive fire building, a whole day on that. You'll be able to build a fire with a cotton ball and a jar of peanut butter by the time you get done with that one. You never lack for building a fire. Traps and snares, all day long, building traps, building snares, learning how to forage. Not only your traps and snares for foraging for food, but for protection, not only against animals, but against two-legged critters too. And then the combat medic class that Chuck does. Awesome class for those of you that have taken it before. So that's what's going on at Schatz Ranch right now. Pro Shop's going to be up and running here, I hope, within the next certainly less than 30 days. And we're going to be back in the business of modifying Glocks, building glide dry practice kits, gunsmithing, tuning up our AKs. And one thing that we are going to do out there is we are going to be, of course, things are always subject to change, but we are in the process of becoming Arsenal AK dealers. So we'll have actually the Arsenal, the president of Arsenal, and a couple other guys will be out at Schatz Ranch here before too long. You know... Mountain shooter, no, we won't be tuning up ARs, I don't think. But for those of you that are AR fans and 1911 fans and stuff. We're going to be, you know, we're going to be helping with that. We, you know, everybody's welcome. Of course, we obviously, all joking aside, you know that we favor Glocks pretty strongly, but without, you know, being serious about it, we do recognize that there are, despite of some of the problems that we see in some types of guns, we do know that there are good, reliable 1911s and everything else out there. And your ARs, if you take care of them and treat them right and lube them right and all that, then they work. I still don't believe they work as good as an AK. I'm an AK fanatic. But we do understand that, you know, that's the way it's going to be with some folks. But we have a song for you 1911 and AK guys. And here you go.
All right, well, tell me.
Huh?
I want to jam with you. Yeah. We're jamming.
All right, here you go. Bob Marley knows what 1911s and ARs do. Okay. Oh. Well, Casper Mountain, I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard spot. I'm going to have to a little bit. Let me check on one thing here real quick, and we'll get on with it here. All right, we can do without that for the time being. Let me get in here and see what we've got for folks in the chat room since we had such a goofy week last week. Got a heck of a lot of anonymous in there tonight. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 anonymous. And we have BB Burner, Casper Mountain, Tinker, his aviator, Mini Men Pin, Mold Sport. Glad to see you in here. Don't see you too often. Mother Earth's in there still. Mountain Shooter, Northwest Heavy, Pumpkin Cat, Texas Sheepdog. Looks like and still coming in. So glad to see that, especially after such a poor performance last week. All right, now that all the fun and games are over and all the lighthearted stuff, we got a couple of things here that'll. We have the. I don't know if you saw in the Olympics. They have a guy. I don't know how to pronounce this. He's a Jamaican bobsledder. And this first name, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's spelled U-S-A-I-N, Usain, I don't know what it is. Usain Bolt. There was a Spanish-speaking, I guess Mexican reporter talking to him. And seemed to be a very, very humble, squared away guy, and wasn't looking for fame and fortune. He just wanted to go out there and do a good job for his country. And he's talking to this gal, and the American national anthem started playing. And he interrupted her in mid-sentence, pointed towards the direction of the sound, and said, "National anthem," and just turned around and left her slack-jawed, wondering what happened there. And he didn't say another word, faced the sound of the music, and I was so incredibly impressed with that, especially not even being an American. We got tons of Americans that would not have done the same thing. I've seen them. I've watched them, and it makes me sick to my stomach. But this guy stopped everything and said, "Hey, national anthem, we'll continue this in a minute." And he turned around, didn't say another word until the song was over. So I wish him and his team and his country well in the Olympics. Let's see here. T-Dog just dropped in there. All right, let's move on. I don't have these in a real good particular order. But we've got a couple of gun-related things I want to go through here. There is, just quickly, it's not long stories. We'll see how this turns out, and we'll have the long story for later. But there's a proposed state law here, and this is an Arizona deal. Comes out of the Arizona Daily Star just a few days ago. Proposed state law that would let gun owners sue city council members and county supervisors personally if those governments pass or try to enforce gun laws that are stricter than state law. Now, what is that saying exactly? Well, if you haven't figured it out, it's a state preemption law that has some teeth. And usually a state preemption law is enforceable only by governmental agencies, depending on, well, the state, actually. And this one is allowing citizens, gun owners, you and I, or I anyway, since I live in Arizona, to sue city council members, those that introduce or try to enforce anything stricter than state law. And that is exactly the same thing as New Mexico's got, but it takes the state to do anything. If Santa Fe wants to enact some stricter laws than state law, then the state has to do something about it. Now, this lets gun owners, citizens, sue. And I think that's awesome. Under this bill, the courts could hit these elected officials with penalties up to $5,000 for passing an ordinance that's out of compliance with state law. Now, we do have state preemption law here now that says that, I don't know the exact wording, but something to the effect of no municipality or county can regulate gun laws because that is a state thing. Critics, of course, say that there are a lot of Tucson deals that are out of compliance, including the gun buyback and destruction program. That's going to stop. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. A ban on gun shows in the Tucson Convention Center, a law that requires police notification of a lost or stolen gun, and mandating those who use a gun in a crime take an alcohol breath test. And Tom Horn, our Attorney General, issued an opinion on that, questioning the breath test and reporting requirement. And no court has found any of the ordinances illegal. Anyone who enforces an illegal ordinance would be subject to penalties as well. So I think that's cool. That could include the chief of police, the zoning folks, the Tucson Convention Center director, anybody else involved with upholding any of these laws. So, like I've said numerous times here lately, the battle lines are being drawn in some areas, and Arizona is one of them. The says, after 13 years of ignoring state law, it's time for city council members to have consequences for their actions the way normal citizens do. This is a guy, a lobbyist for the Arizona State Rifle and Pistol Association, and a board member for the NRA. He said the legislature has been playing cat and mouse with local municipalities over gun laws. He said this bill puts some teeth into state laws and intended to prevent local municipalities from flouting the rules any longer. So we wish these folks well. There's quite a bit more to this story, but it's just more on what the NRA said and what some attorneys have said and whatnot. There's... It's one guy here who specializes in gun and constitutional law said if this bill is passed, would likely pass constitutional muster. He said, I see stronger stuff than that every day. They can bust someone for driving under the influence on the basis of his having smoked marijuana 2 weeks ago. So I think that's awesome. All right. Wow, we're already half hour into the show. Geez, where did that 30 minutes go? Well, let's take a couple of minutes here before we go for a break. Matter of fact, let me step right over here in this other room just for a second and grab the break stuff. And all right, that'll work. Okay, Holyoke, Massachusetts. Police sergeant has been suspended for the second time in a little over 2 years for misplacing a department-owned gun. This guy was suspended for 10 days without pay for leaving his gun in the restroom. If he'd take a concealed carry class with Southwest Shooting Authority, we'd tell him how to avoid that. We actually do address that. What to do with your handgun during a potty break so that you don't forget it. There are numerous stories. Do a little search on a handgun left in bathroom or a pistol left in public bathroom, something like that. And there's a lot of them. And a lot of them are law enforcement officials or law enforcement officers of some kind. It's funny to me. It's not funny. It pisses me off. But you get 10 days without pay for leaving his gun in the bathroom, but when they beat some old man to death, because they have the wrong information, wrong guy, overzealous, power-hungry, adrenaline-charged rookie punks out there, they get suspended with pay. That seems odd to me. The weapon was recovered, and they said in an email that an investigation found he had violated several rules and regulations. He was suspended 5 days without pay in December of 2011 for losing a department-issued sniper rifle in September of 2011, the same year. The rifle was recovered several months later. Doesn't say where or how. I don't know what the story is behind that. But the guy that lost the gun, Officer Hart, did not want to speak, but the president of the police union, the union's position is that the punishment was fair. Yeah, well, it depends on who you ask, I guess. All right, with all that being said, I think we need to dash out of here for a minute.
I'll be back.
Tune in to The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern on Just Measures Radio. Don't miss it. Join Cope for 2 full hours of political incorrectness, current events, gun talk, and so much more.
Been a lot of talk lately about gun bans, naturally, in the wake of what happened in Connecticut last week. And like every other American, my heart goes out to the families who have had to experience this tragedy so close to Christmas. And I'm not one of those people who admonishes any American for bringing up the issue of gun bans and the Second Amendment in the wake of a tragedy like this. I think it's natural and normal. And I think it is an opportunity to discuss this issue openly. I wanted to have my two cents as someone who was formerly anti-gun and formerly anti-Second Amendment. Yes, not anymore, but I used to be. And one of the things I used to say, and I hear a lot of people saying about modern weaponry, is, look, you don't need an assault rifle or a machine gun to take down a bear or a lion or whatever you're taking down in modern America. And that's true, but it's also a mistake to believe that the Second Amendment was made for hunters. It has nothing to do with hunting at all, and this was one of the things that surprised me when I started researching the Second Amendment. It has absolutely nothing to do with hunting. It has to do with freedom and what the ability to brandish a weapon means to your freedom. because your freedom needs to be protected. And how do you protect freedom? Well, let's just think about the last group of people in this country who are forbidden from owning guns. That would be black people. Why? Because we were slaves. And what would happen if you gave a slave a gun? Well, they would no longer be a slave, right? Because a gun is one of the most powerful weapons in any revolution. Our founding fathers knew that, and that's why they enshrined it in our Constitution. They were revolutionaries. And they wanted the people to have the freedom to rise up against any oppressive government, just like they did with theirs. It's what keeps a society free, because when a government knows that its citizens can rise up against it, well, they're a little less inclined to enslave its population. It's why every dictator in modern history has begun with a gun ban in their country under the auspices of protection and safety. But what it did was disarm the citizenry. Do we have a government that we need to revolt against right now, physically speaking? Well, no. But that doesn't mean we never will. That doesn't mean some of us won't ever be enslaved again. I hear Democrats talk all the time about specific conservatives or Republicans. If they get into office, they'll send us back to Jim Crow. They want to put you all back in chains. Well, if you don't want that to happen, then don't support a gun ban. You can ban guns, but you can never ban evil. The best we can do is to tell our children, I will do everything in my power to protect you from evil, even if it means blowing its head off when it walks through the door.
Two years ago, I uttered the phrase too late as a warning that silver and gold prices would soon skyrocket, and thus they have this year. With our current financial predicament, you might want to consider someone who supplies silver American Eagles and other precious metals, a family dealer up in Mount Vernon, Indiana. Just Measures Coin Shop. Call Bobby at 812-305-7091 or click on the link at my homepage at johngaultfla.com.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench, here on Just Measures Radio.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lying in the air, rolling them hills, waiting for me there.
All right, for those of you that, and welcome back to the shooting bench, by the way, those of you that have just finished dinner, you might enjoy this story out of Nigeria. It has nothing to do with guns, freedom, or anything else, but it's kind of a weird story. Restaurant in Nigeria has been shut down after the authorities there found that it had been selling dishes made of human meat, people meat. The police discovered two fresh human heads when they arrested 11 people from the restaurant, including the owner, six women, and four men, following the information that somebody had given. Blood-soaked heads wrapped in cellophane sheets. Now, here's the big deal here. They found two AK-47s, other weapons, dozens of rounds of ammunition. I carry dozens of rounds of ammunition in one magazine. How many dozens are they talking about? Dozens of rounds? So what? I got that much in my pocket, and several mobile phones. All righty then. Well, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Well, it's not funny. There was a pastor there that there was some guy who said every time I go there, I always notice funny movements around. Like dirty people with dirty characters always come in the motel. So I wasn't surprised when they discovered this. And the pastor, who was a little shocked, a little put out, realized that what he had just eaten was people meat. Soylent Green It's people. I went to the motel early this year after eating. I was told that a lump of meat was being sold, and I was surprised, so I did not know it was human meat that I ate at such an expensive price. Oh, well. All right, let's move on. You guys have heard this story in the news here. The that was in Nigeria, Tinker. And the Craigslist killer here. I guess the only reason I even included this is just to, I talk about this all the time, just to further cement those ideas that one should carry a weapon all the time, be trained in its use, and have the mindset to use that training, no matter where you're at, what you're doing, who you're with, what time of day it is, something could come up. And this gal, 19 years old, claimed that she'd killed at least 22 more people. This was a Craigslist killer. It was a 19-year-old gal and her 20-something-year-old husband had gotten together here and decided that it would be a great idea to go and kill some people. So she said maybe she's killed as many as 100. She don't know. She said she quit counting at 22. But if you decide that you want to go out and do these types of things, you know, meet somebody, in the first place, I strongly advise you not to do this. But if you decide to, you need to be prepared mentally and physically to take care of something that you may run into there. You go and meet people that are trying to sell something. They ask you to go meet in a parking lot somewhere. That should be what, in police work, what we call a clue. And I'm thinking it's probably not a good idea. Kilo, glad you made it in. You're not that late. That's okay. We still got lots to talk about. So, anyway, just one of those things to. Yeah, T-Dog says 30 to 50 serial killers on the loose every day among us. That doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. And I guess one of the things that just amazes me are the number of people that toot the NRA's horn, wear the hat, wear the belt buckle, proudly, rah, 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 got the bumper sticker on the car, and they don't carry a gun. It's their choice. I mean, I'm not going to, I'm not mad at them for it. I just frankly think it's dumb. You spend all the money and the time and helping the NRA do this, that, and the other thing. And then you don't exercise, you don't partake of the fruits of your labor. You don't exercise the rights that you're fighting for. And people here in Arizona and New Mexico and Wyoming and in Nevada and Colorado, Montana, places where people have pretty much always been able to carry, openly or concealed, whatever, I mean, concealed has been a little tougher, except the last few years in some places. But nevertheless, you know, I'm a big proponent of open carry. It just seems astounding to me that there's so many people that don't carry that profess to be pro-gun. Now, I get it. I mean, I understand that there are people that are pro-gun, that are recreational shooters, that somehow feel that they do not need to carry a gun in public. I'm just saying I think it's dumb. I don't understand it. But it is certainly your right. And if you want, well then, that's your thing. That's all right. And you do whatever you think's best. So, as we move along here into deeper and darker subjects, we were told we told numerous times back as early as, you know, August of last year about the provisions in Obamacare that will allow forced involuntary inspections of your home by government agents. I don't know about y'all what you think about that, but frankly, I think it sucks. I am not for it. Here's what they claim are people in high-risk categories. These home health visits, they call them. High-risk categories. Hang on a minute. I got to check something here real quick. Nope. All right. Let's go back over here. Where's my story at? There it is. Here you go. These are high-risk categories that may receive involuntary inspections by government agents, forced home inspections. This is the places where families where the mom is not 21 yet. Yeah, and some of you just looked at the computer and said, really? Yeah, really. You know, I remember when moms were, well, I don't necessarily remember him, but I remember hearing stories about moms that were, 15, 16 years old, sometimes even a tad younger. Not that I approved of it, but women have been having babies at a young age for a long, long time. And I would say if there were a... if there were a reason to do this, I would say maybe mothers under 18, but certainly not under just because they're under 21. From a constitutional standpoint, not period, not at all. Okay, I understand that. Families where someone is a tobacco user. So if you have an occasional dip of Copenhagen, or want to have a cigar after dinner or something. You're subject to be broken into sometime during the day. This is probably not going to be a late night no knock warrant type thing. But another category would be families where children have low student achievement or developmental delays or disabilities. And this last one is. It gets to me. Okay, here's check this out. The last category are families with individuals who are serving or formerly served in the armed forces, including such families that have members of the armed forces who have had multiple deployments outside of the United States. So once upon a time, these people were heroes. They were, thank you for serving your country. Thank you for doing your part in maintaining our freedom, blah, blah, blah. Well, now they're considered they will warrant a home health visit because they are in a high-risk category. I do have a problem with that. Thank you. I have a tremendous problem with that. But I guess I shouldn't have because we're all going to sit around here on our big fat nalgas and do nothing about it. So I guess it doesn't bother me because as long as we keep doing nothing about it, they'll keep doing it. So let's just move on to the next story because that's the way it's going to be. It's just one of them things that happens. All right, let's see here. By the way, while I'm pondering on this story here, if you would like to be on the Shots Ranch mailing list, the Southwest Shooting Authority at Schatz Ranch mailing list. Please send me your email address. Send it to theshootingbench@live.com, and you will be added to the list. We spent a lot of time this weekend working on a mailing list here and getting stuff out. Our newsletter is going to be a weekly thing for the time being. And this weekly deal is going to be, it's going to consist of a couple of the most, the newest, the closest upcoming classes. It's going to have a statement from me every week, from the operations manager at Schatz Ranch. We're going to a little, you know, even if it's just a little one paragraph thing about progress we're making in some area or another, or some show that we're going to make. Any events that we're going to will be included in this newsletter. I may throw in a short story or something once in a while. You know, some of the things that you hear me talk about on the show from time to time, I may throw one of those in there. And any upcoming legislation or something that may affect your gun rights, it's not going to be a big long deal. It's probably going to consist of, if you printed it out right now, it's probably a page and a half or so. I would say that it would never be, only on those times when I offer a short story, that it would never be more than 3 pages long. But we want to make it interesting. We want to make it useful, functional, beneficial to you, so that you can look in and say, hey, I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know they had those out there. We're also going to offer some specials price-wise that only people that are that receive the newsletter are going to get. We may pop in there and say, hey, you guys are getting this newsletter. If you want to take this class, we may give you, say, 25% off of this particular class this week. Or we may offer you free lodging if you take all 3 days of the classes we have coming up on a given weekend. Those discounts are only going to be found on the newsletter. Now, there may be others that we mention on the shooting bench or whatever, but there'll be some that will be exclusive to the newsletter. So if you'd like to get in, and always if you get it for a while and you decide you don't like it, then all you got to do is click on unsubscribe at the bottom of the cotton picking thing and be done with it. It ain't like it's a big intrusion anyway. But send your email address to, and if you don't mind, we'd like to add your name onto it. Nobody will see that. Everything naturally will be through a mailing list server type thing, whatever you call them, and nobody's going to see any of it. We'd like to know your names, and we wouldn't even mind having the phone number, but it's not, all we really need is your email address. Send it to theshootingbench@live.com, and we'll get you added in there, just most Ricky Tick. Okay, let's, did you hear that the founder of Cabela's died today? It's an interesting story how Cabela's came about. And hang on just a minute here. Let me get this cut and pick, and there we go. Sometimes I get it without my computer for a few days, and it's like I got to retrain myself and get everything all squared away. But let me go and check before we get started on that. Let me check with... yeah, thank you, His Aviator. His Aviator put, I don't know why I didn't think of that, put the website, the email address there, theshootingbench@live.com. Send me your email address there, and we will get you added most Ricky Tick. We'll probably, we'll have another one coming out probably in the middle of this week. We're going to normally try to send them out on Fridays. We may have one more. We just sent one out yesterday. Started getting replies for it actually within 30 minutes after we sent the first one out from a guy in Tennessee, I think it was. And a lot of the addresses that we put on there were from the sign fiasco that we experienced a little over a year ago. And thousands, man, we got lots of emails from that. And vastly overwhelmingly, they were positive, very, very positive. Some of them actually very touching. There's some of them that were touching enough that I actually made a couple of phone calls Sunday to some people. And then, mind you, this has been a year since they sent these emails out. And I called and said, "Hi, you know, this is Cope Reynolds. You may not remember me, but you." One guy said, "Cope Reynolds, I do remember you. You're the guy with the sign." And another guy, it took him a minute, said, "Oh, hell yes, yeah, I remember that." And then we talked for a little bit about the state of the nation and everything, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed talking to these people, and I felt bad. Amy and I sat down with two computers and started going through these emails, and we just got so, gosh dang, so many of them. There's just no possible way that we could keep up with it. So we finally, it got to be so overwhelming that we just kind of backed away from it and ignored it, and I feel bad about that. And I'm going to rectify that. I'm going to go back and go through these again. And I went through over 1,500 of them this weekend, and I marked quite a few of them that I want to follow up on again. And I've still got probably somewhere between 500 and 800 more to go. And that's just counting the good guys, the pro ones. I have a whole nother list of ones that were pro and placing an order at the same time. They say, "Hey, you know, I appreciate what you're doing. I support you 100%. Send me one of these. I don't care what it costs, just send it one." So that's a whole nother group of people. So it's going to be a while before we get them all worked out and put on there. And by the way, for those of you that are wondering, I'm drinking water tonight, because of the fiasco at the Olympics and all that, then the diet Dr. Pepper is dead and gone. Unless they come out under their own banner here and start making it and it's not under Pepsi or Coke. So, anyway. All right, almost break time again. Let me get back over here and find my cotton picking. Now I'm all lost and screwed up here again. Oh, did you hear about the... I hope that none of you are Starbucks fans. You know, Starbucks, for a short period of time, we thought that they were going to be okay. Well, they turned out not to be so okay, and gun owners across the nation have pretty well dumped them. But we just got a brand new story about Starbucks. This was an amputee, a veteran, by the way, with a service dog. And this employee at Starbucks turned the guy away and his left leg had been amputated in 2009 to bone cancer. He got his service dog 14 weeks ago through an organization called Canine Companions for Independence. Guys from was in Houston, Texas, and he was actually going to speak there about his experience with this organization that gave him the dog when he stopped in the Starbucks. According to him, Starbucks employee met him at the door and told him he couldn't bring his dog in. And I guess that it's one of those things where the employee stereotyped him and actually come out and said, "You're not blind. You don't need that dog," or something along those lines. And stand by here a minute. We are experiencing difficulties again. Let's try this a different way. There we go. Now it's working. I'm getting to be quite the computer genius here with all the problems I've had here. All right, check this out. Check this out today.
Controversy around Starbucks. Apparently the coffee chain turned away a veteran who had an amputated leg because they wouldn't allow his service dog, you're looking at a picture of him right there, into the Starbucks, which is really outrageous on a bunch of different levels. Someone who served our country being turned away in a humiliating manner by Starbucks, but also by the anti-dog policy.
Right. Well, one thing also, one thing might be if an employee comes to you and politely says, excuse me, we don't allow dogs in here. But apparently the employee got very aggressive with the veteran who was in there and belligerent at him for why he would possibly have the dog, and he didn't believe him when he said he was
accused him
disabled.
Of lying, basically. He said, you're not blind, and you know this is a service dog, you don't need it. But he was amputated from the knee down, which is why he had the service dog.
But so, that wasn't good enough
truth.
For Starbucks?
Yeah.
He wasn't blind? By the way, I think it's against the law. I think under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, you have a right to bring a service animal into a stable.
Well, the dog also had his service vest on. So the dog was wearing something that indicated that it was a service
dog. But also, here's a dumb question. Why would you be against that? I mean, you're the store manager and a dog. Who doesn't like dogs and who doesn't love service dogs?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
everybody
does. Those are two separate things. I mean, I don't necessarily like somebody to bring their dogs into a restaurant where I'm eating or into Starbucks. But if it's somebody's service dog, it's a different story.
I want the dog at the table with me.
Well, here in New York, you see a lot of dogs everywhere, like in Starbucks, grocery stores, et cetera.
All right, well, Starbucks did reply, and we have a statement from them. It says, we have spoken with this customer to apologize for his experience, and we hope to have the opportunity to serve him again. They also said they're going to use this as a coaching experience, a training situation, or a teachable moment for their employees. So,
do you know how much cleaner dogs are than a lot of people I run into at Starbucks here in New York? A lot cleaner.
Yeah,
no, it's just true. They're cleaner.
That might be true.
I would rather kiss the dog.
But what's troubling is it does keep happening at a lot of different places, not just Starbucks, but a lot of places. And we need to show a little bit more respect for our veterans and you know what they've gone through, especially when they come back home.
This whole respect thing has become kind of a thing in the past. Kind of went out with running boards on cars here in some places. But all right. Well, with that little bit of cheery news, and Starbucks did apologize. You got to give them credit for that. You know, there's other things that I don't agree with them at. So it's not that would they have apologized if they hadn't caught so much grief over it? Probably not. But we'll see. Anyway. Well, I'm going to go in and take a little break here, and I'll be back. I'll be back even as soon as I find my little break. There we go.
You must figure I'm a real dangerous man.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Bom, 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 I ran. Bom, 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 I ran. Some rocks. Tell the Ayatollah gonna put you in a box. Bomb, 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 bomb. The country's got a feeling, really, it's the ceiling. Bomb, 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 bomb. Old Uncle Sam's getting pretty hot. Time to turn Iran into a parking lot. Bomb, bomb. Call the bombardiers, call the financiers, better get their ass in gear. Bomb, Iran, bomb, 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 Iran. The country's got a feeling, really, in the ceiling. Bomb, Iran, bomb, 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 Iran.
It's Nuka.
Woo!
hurricanes, tornadoes, western firestorms, earthquakes, financial collapse, government upheaval. What happens when Walgreens closes? Whom do you turn to? You turn to Kat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on the Medi-Chat and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going no matter what. The Medi-Chat, live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measures Radio Network.
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have been living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron.
All right, we're back. Welcome to the second hour of the Shooting Bench. And as I said just before the break there, a few minutes, Richard Cabela has died. He died today in Sydney, Montana. And 77 years old. Him and his wife, Mary, and his brother founded what we all know as Cabela's. And it was kind of an accident, according to the story here. They said in 1961, he was on a buy-in trip in Chicago for his father's furniture store. And he bought $45 worth of flies, fishing fly lures. When he couldn't sell them, he said, "Oh, now, in 1961, $45 was a lot of money. That was a hell of a good day's work there." So when they didn't sell, he put an ad in Sports Afield magazine and offered to sell them through the mail. And I guess the response was such that he said, "Hey, there's a market for this. I think we need to sell more fishing gear through the mail." So they produced their first catalog in 1963, moving right along there, and operated strictly as a mail-order company until 1987. 24 years, they did nothing but mail-order stuff. Unbelievable. And they finally opened their first retail store, and they started selling on the Internet in 1998. In 2001, they opened its own bank to process credit card transactions. Awesome. For that $45 investment in 1961, they say Cabela's has now grown to a $3.6 billion company with 50 stores in about 25 states and Canada. Forbes estimated last year that Richard and Jim Cabela's combined stake in the company was worth $1.2 billion with a bravo. Richard Cabela served as chairman of the board for the Sydney-based company until June when he became chairman emeritus, I guess is how you say that. And his brother Jim took over as the chairman. So he's survived by his wife, 9 children, 2 sisters, and 3 brothers, and no information about funeral services or anything like that. So, all right, let's move right along here. We've got a 10,000 things. And by the way, I'm already getting some emails into the Shooting Bench at live.com. If you want to be on Shots Ranch, Southwest Shooting Authority at Shots Ranch mailing list, we've got a neat little newsletter that we're getting out. The first one went out yesterday. And there'll be another one probably midweek this week. It won't be another one. It'll be the same one that's going out to some new addresses. Those of you that have already gotten it once will not receive it again. So, and then we'll get back on schedule. I'd like to try to have these out. Excuse me. I'd like to try to have these out on Friday night so that people have the weekend to go over them and sit around and read them when they got the time to do it. You know, they'll know to have it up and read it Monday morning at the office or whatever. So that's my goal that I'd like to try to do. So. Let me see. Let me go back here to the chat room and see. Arizona Fat Man just joined us. And Kilo joined us just a few minutes ago. Scoutus, honey! Hey, my sweetie pie is in there. She's sitting all quiet and pretty in the back right there. Look at her. Ain't she the doll? That's awesome. All right. Well, I gotta straighten up and sit up here, and let me straighten my hair up a little bit. I want to look nice for her. There we go. Okay, that looks better. All right. Now I'm all flustered. Jeez, I don't know what to say. All right. Got a lot to say, though. Got a cotton-picking bunch of stuff here to do. Let me find my deal here. Got a couple of concealed carry things. Ordinarily, we'd save these till Thursday, but there's just a lot of stories right now, a lot of stuff that we need to go over. So I'm going to try to go through these as quick as I can. I got like 80,000 of them here we need to do. New Mexico, for one. New Mexico has seen their concealed carry permit program more than double just in the last year. Why did I do that? How dumb am I? Let me do that one more time. Wow, that was stupid. There we go. I worked it out all by myself. All right. New Mexico is typically, since 2008, they go through somewhere in the vicinity of about 4,500 concealed carry permits a year. That's about how many they issue. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot to some of you folks from states that have 29 million people in them, but New Mexico's only got a little over a million folks. It may be getting up close to 2 million now, I'm not sure. But it's still not a lot compared to a lot of other states. So that's quite a few permits. But in the last year, now remember, I have forsaken the governor that I loved so desperately, 3.5 years ago? We thought Susana Martinez walked on water, and we supported her and believed in her enough that we actually believed we could walk on water and follow her. But alas, we find out that she's just like any other lying politician out there, and said that she would never support any kind of gun control and everything. You know the whole story. We talked about it back when all this was happening. Well, the good folks of New Mexico have decided that their good governor's a lying old hussy. And by the end of 2013, they reported that the number had increased from, 22,000 permits in circulation as of 2012. 2013, that had jumped up to 37,000. 10,601 new licenses issued in 2013. That's a little more than twice as many, 100% increase over the last several previous years. Now, they've got a little bit of misinformation in here. It says to obtain a permit in the state, there's a $100 fee, which pays for fingerprints and a background check. That's not true. Well, I guess in a way it is. It pays for processing fingerprints, not pays for fingerprints. After passing a mandated training course, which one is required to retake every other year, no, it's not. You never take that training course again unless your permit expires. You take a 2-hour refresher course after 2 years when you get your permit, and you take a 4-hour renewal course after 4 years. You never take the class over, the original class over again, unless you let it expire. One thing that New Mexico does that most states don't do is it requires a health information release form before giving you a permit. It talks about open carry being legal in New Mexico. I mean, New Mexico's got, in spite of some of the stuff that's gone on, New Mexico still has, for the time being, hopefully the gun owners there will stay on top of things. They've still got pretty good gun laws there. Let's see. Just looking at some of the percentages here, that wouldn't mean anything to anybody except people that live in New Mexico. It says that the trend is going up in several states like this. New Mexico is not alone in this. 2013, they said Kansas saw their applicants double, skyrocketing from 12,300 to over 25,000 just last year. Colorado processed twice as many. They said twice as many in the first 6 months of last year when compared to all of 2012. So something is brewing here. It sure enough is, and it's going to be very interesting to see how all this plays out. So with that story in mind, let's look at another one here that's closely related, the mountain shooter. This may interest you. Let me see. There it is. Give me one second. When I forward these to my computer with my phone, I have to cut and paste them in here because the hot links don't work for whatever reason. So with this new court ruling that we talked about last week in California, which was awesome, by the way, and absolutely unheard of for the Ninth Circuit Court, says that you, in fact, do not have to prove that you need a concealed carry permit, that it is unconstitutional for you to do so. How awesome is that? Well, it's going to be more awesome if the state of California appeals that, and the Supremes side with the Ninth Circuit Court, that will affect every state in the union. And ultimately, it may anyway, if California allows that to stay without appealing it, there will still be a good amount of leverage there for other states, for other legislators to say, hey, now look what California did. They've ruled it unconstitutional. We need to do the same thing. Now, it'd be better if the Supreme Court would say, yep, California's right. The Ninth Circuit Court's right. It is unconstitutional. So, therefore, I, with the strike of my gavel here, therefore will be no more may-issue states. All states will be shall-issue. So, Cal Guns, everybody's familiar with Cal Guns if you keep up with the gun world even a little bit. The current population of California, 29 million misguided individuals that refuse to leave there. But thanks to the May issue permit system, there is only 56,000 active permits as of 2013. 56,341 out of 29 million people. Now, what did we say about New Mexico a while ago? There's less than 2 million in New Mexico, and there's 37,000 as of 2013, including the, you know, they had, let's see, let me go back over here and look at California, the 56,000. They had 20% of California's total in 1 year. For a total of 37,000, over 37,000 right now, 37,579 if you want to get testicle about it. But Cal Guns has done a little survey, a little study, a little calculating here, and they're saying, they're projecting the numbers out here and saying that the state would have to issue in the first year, if the state is forced to adopt this shall-issue permit as a result of this most recent decision, Peruta versus San Diego, based on the percentage of the population that decided to apply for a permit, and using all the existing data there, Cal Gun says that there will be anywhere from 300,000. It's pretty wide margin here, so they're not real sure. Anywhere from almost 300,000 to 1.5 million Californians will receive concealed carry permits, figuring that a 1 to 5% application rate. Well, I think that the application rate will go up substantially. The application rate, I think, well, I think that the information that they're using is faulty, because when people find out that you can, a lot of people don't put in for applications because it's a damn much trouble and such a low likelihood of success that they don't bother. So I think what if this all goes through and it becomes what we call a shall issue state, I think that the applications will go up probably 500%. They're using just what would be used as, you know, what they have used in the past. But when it becomes a little more, you know, more of a likelihood that they'll actually be able to get this, I bet that it will go through the cotton picking roof. The diet, lack of Diet Dr. Pepper is having an effect on me. That's you know, Scott, as I have always said, that California itself is an awesome state. You just have to get rid of about 99.97% of the people in the state, and it would be great. There's not a state in the union, and I let the record show that there's not another state in this, in the United States, not another place in the world that's within a political boundary of some kind that offers the diverse landscape and everything that California does. It just doesn't exist. It's if it wasn't for having to put up with some of the people there, it's an awesome place, and I don't mind going there. I do mind going there because of the people and the fear of the law and everything. But other than that, boy, I tell you what, me and Amy went through, what was that lake, baby, that we went through? Was that up by Mount Shasta, I think? I don't remember what it was. Boy, I'm going to tell you what, that was the most incredible landscape, the most beautiful scenery I've ever seen in my life. It was every bit the equal of anything that I've seen in Montana or Wyoming or any place else. Absolutely breathtaking. I couldn't believe it. I wish we kind of puttered around there and drove around and looked for a little while. And that's something I just don't do. Amy knows that. When we're traveling, we travel. If we got a place to go and we have a destination, then we need to get there. Now, I don't mess around. But we stopped and drove around there and looked and stayed in a motel right there close, and I really thoroughly enjoyed that. I didn't want to have to stop because I was afraid I'd have to talk to a Californian, but to drive around and look at it was pretty cool. Now, I tell you what, northern, that far north in California, people are regular folks. There's good people up there. And it starts deteriorating the farther south you get. Once you get below Sacramento, you got to look long and hard. But there's good people from one end of California to the other. It's just that they get a lot more sparse once you pass Sacramento going south. And by the time you get all the way down to the southern part of the state, you've just about run out of the good folks there. There's still a few hiding around there that in the mountains and the hills and stuff, like mountain shooters down in that part of the country somewhere, I think. But anyway. All right. Let's go. That was our... We've got a bunch of... Oops, wrong one. Sorry about that. Let me get all my... I broke my... Okay. We talked... There are some very, very bad things here that we need to talk about. And let me, for those of you that may be new to the show, and I always, always, always start out with this, because there's always some idiot out there that wants to go out and tell everybody how anti-cop I am, and I am not. I absolutely am not, and if you think that, you are a fool. I am anti-corruption in government. I am anti-jackbooted thug. I am very much pro-cop for all those peace officers out there that still have a little common sense. For those that honor their oath, God bless you. You've got a hell of a job, but you do have my absolute undying support, and I pray that you get home safe every night to your families. I can't say the same thing about some of these other people. here is in Oklahoma, of all places. I would not have thought this from Oklahoma. Valentine's Day. Family in Oklahoma said five police officers. I can't even hardly tell this story. Five police officers beat their father to death. Beat him to death. This is something that you expect. I can see, you learn in when you deal with batons, you don't hit people in certain places. You don't take an asp baton and smack somebody upside the head with it with any degree of force, because there is a strong possibility that you might kill them or permanently injure them. And so you just don't do that. There are much safer, and some places that offer you more control and certain pressure points and weak spots and areas where you get compliance much faster than hitting somebody upside the head with it. But this was not just a mistaken one strike and you're down type thing. They beat him to death. It's under investigation. The officers placed on administrative leave. It doesn't say whether they were with pay or not. My guess is, yes, they're still getting paid. February 14th, this most recent Valentine's Day, an argument started, a mother and a daughter, and the mother wound up slapping the daughter and left the theater. And the man run out after his wife, trying to get her to stop. Don't go. Don't run away mad. Don't go into traffic with your attitude that you have right now. It's dangerous, and, just don't go. And that's when the cops intervene and ask for his identification. And according to the news, the police say that he attempted to fight with police, which led to a physical altercation. Well, even if that were true, it does not warrant beating somebody to death. Hitting somebody and having them die as a result of one strike is a whole different story, a whole different ball of wax than beating someone to death. They beat him to death. The mother and the daughter actually told him that was not at all true, that he was simply trying to get past the officers, push past them to keep his wife from driving off mad. That does not warrant beating somebody to death. As the confrontation got a little out of hand, five cops beat him beyond recognition, which was all captured on the daughter's cell phone. Said they jumped on him like he was some kind of killer or drug dealer and beat him up. He never fought the officers. They beat him on the head, and that's how he lost his breath. When they flipped him over, you could see all the blood on his face. He was disfigured. You couldn't recognize him. Although paramedics were already at the scene, responding to a separate incident, they said he could not be revived. They beat him completely dead, as opposed to beating him halfway dead. If you beat somebody half to death twice, do they die? I've always wondered that. It was clear that when the woman, the mother, saw him, that he was dead after the beating was over. And afterwards, the police asked her what happened. She said her husband was just trying to break up a fight between her and her daughter. So, another tragic part of this is the fact that the mother and daughter will always, or at least I would assume, will always feel guilt. That if it hadn't have been for them fighting, that this never would have happened. So, the things that you do and the things that you say sometimes affect more than just you, more than those that are immediately around you. Some of the things that you say and do may have now that also holds true for the good things that you do. Hold the door open for somebody sometime, or you might do something nice for somebody and they say, I should do that more often. I should be a little more courteous to people, and maybe that'll rub off on somebody. You know, you get around people that are foul mouthed and cuss all the time with every other breath. And when you don't follow that lead, and you know, maybe that'll help them to say, you know, it sounds pretty bad for me to do that. Maybe I should try to clean it up just a little bit. And you know, maybe that's a good thing. But the other side of that is when you things that you say and do that are I would go out on the limb here and say evil, that are bad, that are despicable, that are filthy, that are whatever, then that also rubs off on other people. And some of the things that you say and do will affect others anyway. Getting off on a let's see. Let me go back here. Let me clean this up here where I can find some. I got so caught in picking many things open. I've still got 10,000 things to talk about and only got 30 minutes to do it in. So let me go on another little break here. And I'm going to put that in there and I'm going to move that out. And you know what? I think I'm going to put that in there on account I want to. And it's my job. So we're going to take about a 6 minutes or so here, and
I'll be back.
Tune in to The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern on Just Measures Radio. Don't miss it. Join Cope for 2 full hours of political incorrectness, current events, gun talk, and so much more.
My name is John Q. Public, and I am a member in good standing of an organization called America, and I have a message for those agencies and agents that work under the auspices of the Department of Justice. You have called me many things in the past, rebel, right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, to name a few, but that is not important. What I'm about to tell you is... There must be accountability in all things, sooner or later. When you sin, however big or small, you will be held accountable, either in this life or the next. When you invade people's privacy, violate their rights, steal property, break up families, and hurt people, the time is fast approaching that you will be held accountable both in this life and the next. You and I took the same oath, administered by the same people. We both swore to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some of you actually feel that you honor that oath, but you violate it each time you force a young girl to her bedroom floor in nothing but her underwear and hold her there at gunpoint. Or when you shoot or stomp a family pet to death, or shoot a young boy down in cold blood in the mountains of Idaho, or incinerate over 70 innocent people in a church in Texas. Warriors indeed. How dare you call me a domestic terrorist? I go to work every day, sometimes at 2 jobs to make ends meet. I attend church every Sunday that I'm not working. As difficult as it is, I try to make time each day for my kids. I teach them about the Constitution and the Golden Rule. I have extra food and supplies to help myself and others through hard times. I try as hard as I can to obey the ever-increasing number of laws that are forced upon us, and I pay my fair share of taxes. I have a gun to protect myself and my family against those who would do us harm. I shouldn't have to use it to protect us against you. In fact, your organization is not even authorized by the Constitution and shouldn't be here, but since you are here, let's talk about your job description and performance. We have common enemies, you and I, that we should be united in fighting. The Founding Fathers never intended for us to fight each other. We should be as one. The current us-against-them attitude should never have been allowed to rear its ugly head. Division is unhealthy for the country. You will undoubtedly conduct more unconstitutional invasions of homes and businesses, and more innocent people will be injured or killed. A dairy in Pennsylvania, a rabbit grower in Kansas, a gun shop in New Mexico. It may even be me and my family. But let me make one thing abundantly clear. We, the people, have grown weary of living in fear. We're tired of being treated like animals. If you continue to follow the path that you are on, the time may come when you will not find us waiting to be descended upon when we least expect it. We may come to you. We outnumber you 1,000 to 1, and the same people that trained you trained many of us. We, the people, are becoming aware of those numbers. One day, you will launch one of your cowardly sneak attacks on an unsuspecting young family in Idaho, and instead of your brave sniper finding a defenseless, unarmed woman holding a baby in her arms, he may find that the tables have been turned. One day, instead of terrorizing and destroying another American family in retribution for a trivial infraction of an unconstitutional law, instead of shooting down defenseless children or young veterans that are trying only to live the American dream, you may find patriots waiting for you that have been pushed to their limit. One day, you will find that you have awakened a sleeping giant, and we the people will indeed hold you accountable for your evil deeds. Hundreds of men, women, and children have died at your hand because of poor information, no information, or just plain overzealous, out-of-control power freaks on an adrenaline high that have no regard for human life. Agents that think their badge is a license to kill with impunity. The difference between you and us is that we will not harm your family as long as they stay out of the fight. I don't want your family to go through what you have put many of ours through. Yes, they will be sad if you don't come home, but when the grieving is over, they will come to understand that you simply chose the wrong side. You see, this is nothing more than a conflict between good and evil. It's that simple, but this is not how it is supposed to be. This is not the America that the Founding Fathers entrusted us with. I implore each of you, before you go to work tomorrow, to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and see if you truly like what you see. If you can look at yourself and be proud of what you've done, or what you may be called upon to do, or more importantly, if you feel that you can walk uprightly before God and look Him in the eye and feel justified in what you have done, then we have nothing further to discuss. But some of you are not really jackbooted thugs. Some of you are simply misguided and feel that you really are doing the right thing. To you, I say, please, follow your conscience, do what you know in your heart is right, for we the people will hold you accountable.
I just hate stupid people.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Corp Reynolds. Maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench here on Just Measures Radio.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me.
All right. Let's finish this up here right quick. We got a number of stories we need to get through here, but this one, I think, is awesome. This is in Gary, Indiana, at the senior center. Cops responded to this club here at 11:30 at night, and there was a concealed carry holder in there, 65 years old, that wound up shooting a gunman that committed 5 people shot altogether, and this gal here, let me see, it shows a picture of a gal, let me make sure that I'm telling this right here. Yep, I think I'm telling it right. That, anyway, it appears to be that this woman, 65 years old, she was actually shot herself. Now, I'm saying she with a little bit of a, we got a King's X here. I'm hoping that this picture is correct. But she was shot and taken to an area hospital. 23-year-old thug from Chicago went in there. Well, you know the name of this place? Safe and Sound Social Club, Gary, Indiana. Why is it safe and sound? Because there's a 65-year-old grandma with a concealed carry license and a gun there. Works for me. I'm okay with that. All right, zero tolerance stuff. You know how furious this makes me when they have to talk about this. But that and racism just absolutely burns me till I can't stand it. Y'all saw the picture. Actually, it was on, I think the first time we saw it was probably on Jay Leno's show. And it showed your Muslim in chief kicking a door open. He was all frustrated about something and kicked this door. And they kind of suppressed that and didn't make a real big splash. We saw it a time or two on TV, and then they kind of disappeared. You didn't see it too much. Well, there was a student at McGill University in Montreal, Canada, that was forced to issue a formal apology for emailing this picture around here because some of the students somehow thought this was racist. So you see a black man kicking in a brown door of a room that has white walls beside a red flag that's red, white, and blue. Somehow this whole racist thing just escapes the hell out of me. I don't get it. I don't know where they get this. But anyway, he was forced to apologize because he sent this down. The reason he sent this out is he, in the way Jay Leno put it out, it was kind of a humorous thing that suggested that the president was fed up with press conferences. Now, we don't know why he actually kicked the door open, but that's it was funny when they talk about it that way. Well, McGill, vice president of the university student government, sent out an email with this picture on there and a caption that said, had nothing to do with race, had nothing to do with politics, had nothing to do with Obama, had nothing to do with nothing. It said, honestly, midterms, get out of here. That's all it said. What happened after that was another student issued a formal complaint against this kid for committing what he called microaggression. What the hell is microaggression? For those not up to date, I guess this is a microaggression is the latest phrase for leftist radicals seeking to blame racism for common annoyances suffered by people of all races. Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that cleared up. But some of the activists at a place like University of Michigan have insisted that trivial slights such as having your opinion second-guessed in a group assignment are microaggressions that betray the campus as a hostile place for students of color. Wow. Unbelievable. But this kicking this door in was racist because of the, quote, cultural, historical, and living legacy surrounding people of color, particularly young men, being portrayed as violent. Well, thank you, Mr. Kenyon in chief. You've just shown just exactly what they taught, what they say is true. Huh. Imagine that. They said technically the kid got off easy under this new student government equity policy. He could have been suspended or even dismissed from his position of vice president of the organization for sending out this picture. You have got to be kidding me. Do you know how you can tell when you're living in a dictatorship? Northwest Heavy, if you've already gone, I'm sorry I missed you, but good night. You know how you can tell when you're living in a dictatorship? It is illegal, it is unacceptable for you to say anything bad about the sitting dictator or the door-kicking dictator or whatever the case may be. I'm not okay with that. No, I don't like it a little bit. It's like, you always heard the story 20 times about my son and his little fight that he had out in the field. I said, no, you don't apologize. No, you're not in trouble. You're not in trouble, son. No, what they've done, let's don't look at this as a suspension for the rest of the day. Let's look at this as they thought you did such a good job, they want to send you down with me to get some ice cream. So let's go. Let's go down and get some ice cream. I'd be honored, by golly, to take you down and buy you an ice cream. And that's just exactly what we did. I wish I could find that. Here, let me look over here real quick. I may have something for you. And then again, I may not. All right, well, never mind. Okay, boy, we got to hurry. All right, zero tolerance stuff. This is pathetic. And if you are sitting in front of your keyboard, lean back a little bit so that if you puke, you won't get anything. It's a real pain to clean this out of between the keys and everything. Let's let them tell you. Silver Springs, Maryland.
New at 10, it was supposed to be an honor celebration of school achievement, but apparently the best part of the party at a Montgomery County middle school was only for straight A students. Well, tonight, parents are upset that some other students were excluded from that party. Fox 5's Karen Gray Houston is back from Silver Spring with all the details. Karen?
Hey, Sean. Straight A students at Eastern Middle School were invited to a party. It started during seventh period, and that's the final period of the day. Well, students who got A's, B's, and C's could come later, after the pizza was served. And if your grades were not up to snuff, you didn't even get an invitation at all.
Speaking of not getting an invitation, we were not allowed inside for the party at Eastern Middle School either. So we know a little about what it's like to be left out. At the end of the class day, hundreds of students who piled onto the school buses had not been invited to the dance, which we hear from the straight A students was quite a party.
You get A's in everything?
Yeah.
Does that make you smart? How was the party?
Awesome.
It was fun.
What did you guys do at the party?
Well, we danced, and then there was a game room where you could play board games.
Lesser grades, you were let into the party after school was out, but straight A's, you got all the perks. And even the A students thought that wasn't quite right.
The kids that got A's, they got to eat pizza and soda.
And what about if you got B's and C's?
You just get soda.
No pizza?
Nope.
Doesn't that seem wrong?
I guess.
It wasn't really fair to people, but I think it just like motivated you to work harder if you wanted to stay there the whole time.
Some parents had mixed feelings about separating students and rewarding them based on their grades.
It's an incentive for children to do well, as well as for some students who don't make it. It can be a little discouraging.
Others wonder if officials at Eastern Middle School should go in another direction.
I'm not sure that that's the kind of thing that actually motivates kids. I don't think that they're working hard for 2 months to, you know, go to a party at school for an hour.
A spokeswoman for the school system told Fox 5 recognitions are decided at the school level in collaboration with the school community and said many schools recognize achievement in a variety of ways. The spokeswoman said if parents have questions or suggestions, they are encouraged to bring it up with their principal and other officials at their school.
Well, there's nothing new about recognizing outstanding students for academic achievement, but what some parents and students at Eastern are concerned about is this emphasis on straight A's and also on separating students into groups in a school that also includes a magnet program, Sean.
I can certainly understand their concern there, Karen. Thank you so much.
yeah, I think that was absolutely wrong. If they wanted to have a party for the kids, that's fine. Everybody gets pizza, and they say, okay, now we have, they call out names. Here's a certificate. These people got straight A's. Give them a big hand and all that. And that's okay. But to invite these kids to a party, and it may not even be an invitation. They may have said, you'll be at the party. To invite these kids to the party, and then what do you do? You find out, do they have their report card with them? You have to show your report card to get a piece of pizza? I think that was chicken spit, if you ask me. I thought that was wrong. But that's just me. There's a lot of things I think's wrong with this world. And as soon as I become president, I'm going to fix a whole hell of a bunch of them. 24 hours, you're going to have a whole different world around here. Another thing in Obamacare, we're taking another turn here. I'm gonna read that before I mess it up. We're just gonna go on to another one here. I don't want to say that wrong. Okay, another concealed carry thing here. Ohio sheriff. This was a sheriff that refused. This is a bad thing with may issue permits as opposed to shall issue permits, as California may be changing to here before long. In Ohio, a sheriff there refused to renew any concealed carry permits. Well, he's going to get his day in court, all right, on account of he got 25 counts by the grand jury. He's been indicted. And Athens County Sheriff Pat Kelly, same guy, refused to renew any license to concealed carry holders for some very shady and suspicious and trivial reasons. That he's got, he refused to renew a handgun license rights of a man who had a 10-year-old domestic violence charge that was pleaded down to a conviction for disorderly conduct. In order for you to qualify for your concealed carry permit in Ohio, you must not be under indictment, be charged with, or convicted of any felony. You also must not be under indictment, charged with, or convicted of any offense that involves trafficking in drugs, a misdemeanor offense of violence, or negligent assault. Well, the sheriff, 25 counts. Let me show you what the sheriff's in for. 3 counts of theft in office, a 4th-degree felony. 10 counts of theft in office, 5th-degree felony. 4 counts of theft, a 5th-degree felony. 1 count of engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, 1st-degree felony. Money laundering, 3rd-degree felony. Tampering with evidence, 3rd-degree felony. Tampering with records, 3rd-degree felony. Perjury, 3rd-degree felony. 1 count of failure to keep cash book, unclassified felony. Obstructing official business, 2nd-degree misdemeanor. And dereliction of duty, 2nd-degree misdemeanor. So, as the song says, that old boy's going to grow old in the pokey. I don't think he'll be sheriff for a while. All right, let's get one more here. This is, I don't know why I laughed. It's not funny. I laughed to keep from crying or puking. I'm not sure which. Here's a cafe that was ordered to remove a ventilation fan because the Muslims next door found the smell of bacon, well, it made them physically sick due to the foul odor of bacon. The fan had to be the fan's been in Beverly Snack Shack for 3 years, and says that this mother of 7, whose husband, 50, is himself a Turkish Muslim, worked more than 50 hours a week buying, preparing, cooking hot and cold sandwiches and in hot pots for their customers. These are the people that own the place. The Muslims next door can't stand the smell of bacon, so they had to remove this fan and let all that bacon smell permeate the cafe. And that's okay. I could stand to sit in a cafe and smell bacon all day. That wouldn't bother me a bit. So anyway, they said they have Muslim people come in for different snacks and all that stuff. Nobody has said anything. This guy next door is just being a jerk, and for whatever reason, because he's not a Turkish Muslim, he's probably some other kind of Muslim. Anyway, enough is enough. I got through most of the ones I wanted to do tonight, so I need to make a couple of quick phone calls here. So I think I'm going to scoot on out of here. Let me get my archives up and running here properly. And Amy had thought about she may try to do a show in the morning, but there's been some unexpected things come up here, so that's not going to happen. With any luck, maybe Wednesday morning I can get her and her sister on there, Dana, on at the same time. That would be an awesome show. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope they're able to do it. And let's see, Thursday morning I don't know. I'm not sure what time her plane leaves and everything. So Thursday, I'm not sure. Friday is her normal day off. But Monday, a week from today, Amy will be back in all of her splendor and all of her glory. And so put it on your calendar. And Amy will be back here Monday with all of her bright ray of sunshine that she lightens everybody's day with. At least all of those that are able to listen first thing in the morning. All right, let me find get that out of here. What in the world? All right, got it. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here. We'll see y'all tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening. Bye-bye.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.